The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Good morning, everybody. Back again here at the Outdoorsman Radio Show, and we're talking to Chuck Stentz this morning from Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Good morning, Chuck. Are you with us?
Good morning.
How you been?
All right.
Good. You been out doing a little electrofishing these days?
We're pretty much in shad mode right now. So
I got it.
We've been out since the later part of March.
Right.
We're starting to wrap it up now. So now we're going to be starting. Work with sturgeon.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, that's kind of what we're talking about here today. I don't know that a lot of people know that that we have sturgeon here in Maryland waters. They're a prehistoric beast. I guess sturgeons go back to almost the time of the dinosaurs, do they not?
Yeah, 120 million years.
Is that all? It's older than me.
I take exception to the beast moniker for sturgeon. I like to call them charismatic megafauna.
Charismatic megafauna. Okay, well, you know what?
You have to look that one up on Wikipedia.
I can do that. No, I know what charismatic megafauna is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, indeed. So how long have you been involved in this particular study? I know we've got captive sturgeon in our hatcheries, and we're breeding them with the intent of reintroducing those fish back into the ecosystem. But that effort has kind of been stymied a little bit by the federal government. Yes,
correct. Yeah, once the sturgeon were listed on the endangered species list in 2012, basically all of that work had to stop.
So we were working towards their recovery. And then they listed them as endangered, so now we can't work towards their recovery anymore.
In that project, yes.
In that particular project, okay.
Yeah, you have to go through a very lengthy permitting process just to be able to do any kind of research with our captive population. We have the permit process takes about a year.
Right.
Luckily, we were able to get basically piggyback on the good people at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So,
right.
we were able to continue with a little bit of the work that we were doing
right.
until we got our own permit. And then we were able to continue doing some of the, research work other than releasing the fish.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've been to the hatchery, but there was a couple of tankfuls of near spawning age sturgeon when I was there, which I'm assuming now they're able to spawn, and you can collect the eggs and so forth. But there were also a tank full of juveniles there that were about 15 to 18 inches long when I visited.
Yeah, they're 15 to 18 fish. They're big now.
Yeah, I bet they are.
Yeah, they're getting to be a handful. We try to sample them every spring and fall, get the lengths and weights on them and all that. And it's a good thing we're big strapping people, because they're getting pretty heavy to deal with. We got a couple of them that are over 130 pounds.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a lot easier to work with them in the springtime. We overwinter them in ponds.
Right.
And, when you're taking them out of 40, 41, 42 degree water, they're not quite as feisty as what they are when we're trying to take them out of the indoor tank.
The indoor holding tank, yeah.
In the fall, yeah. They're a lot more feisty in the fall.
Right. So right there we've got a breeding pod, so to speak, of sturgeon right here in Maryland, and not allowed to do anything with them. It's just crazy to me.
But correct.
But that's, you know, you've got a fishery that wants to be recovered, and here you go.
Yeah.
No thanks. So.
Well, luckily we think we have a population in the Nanticoke River, so we.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, we fished. Where did we fish? We fished on the.
Yeah, you fished with us on the Marshy Hope.
Marshy Hope, Marshy Hope, yes.
But yeah, we fished just down below Federalsburg.
Right.
You know, most people don't realize that there's sturgeon in that river, so.
Yep. So we've got these sturgeon. First of all, Chuck, tell us your title. I mean, I know you're the captain of the big electrofishing boat that travels across Maryland, different places, and does the electrofishing, and I think...
Amongst many,
yeah, yeah. There are plenty of folks out there helping you and that type of thing. But what's your title?
I'm the project leader for our Najimis Restoration Project.
Okay.
Basically, all the fish that we try to restore, namely American shad, hickory shad. We have worked with herring, Atlantic sturgeon, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm the project leader of
that group. Got it. Okay, 120 million years ago, there were sturgeon swimming in the waterways of the Earth. The biggest one we know of the Atlantic sturgeon ever caught, was 14 feet long and weighed 811 pounds.
Yeah, that was that's always kind of the go-to fish that everybody talks about. It was caught up in Canada,
right?
You know, out in the ocean, but you know, that's the one that everybody always talks about. We've never seen any that big. The biggest one I've ever seen is about 10 feet long.
Mm-hmm. A wild fish here, caught here in Maryland?
No, actually, that one was caught in the James River.
Ah.
We went down. This was before we started our project. We went down with the folks at VCU.
Yep.
And we basically just helped them for a day and. Luckily, we caught, I think when I was there, we caught 6 fish.
Nice.
And they were big fish.
Mm-hmm.
That was our first indoctrination into, you know, really big fish.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that we've worked with up to that time, you know, were smaller fish, you know, ones that we purchased from Canada.
Right.
And brought back to the hatchery, you know, the little ones that you saw.
I got it. So you're on the Nanticoke. You give us a day in the life.
Well, we go out in the springtime. We went out this past March and we started to deploy all of our telemetry receivers.
Mm-hmm.
We have roughly 30, 32 of them in the Nanticoke and Marshy Hope combined, and then we have a couple of them in the Pocomoke and also the Chop Tank. You know, the neighboring tributaries.
So what this does is records some of the fish that you, it doesn't record, of course, a fish that is untagged, but it records, they're a school fish. I mean, you know, you'll mark one or two of them and there'll be five or six in the pod is what way I understand it. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's what we always hope. And now that we have more of them tagged.
Right.
We use those as the canary in the, you know.
Yeah.
In the mine, so, or the Judas fish, so to speak.
Yeah. So your telemetry, your receiver's pinging, which means now you got fish in the river.
Correct. Yeah.
You just got to figure out where they are.
The fish is what has the transmitter.
Transmitter.
The receivers are what we put out in March.
Yep.
And we leave them out there. We'll leave them out until probably December.
Right.
We like to pull all of our receivers before. You know, we get the
ice damage, sure.
Bad weather.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We've been lucky so far. We haven't had any loss due to vandalism or.
Well, that's good. That's
good. And some of our colleagues in Virginia, they have 50% loss with their equipment every year. And,
wow.
And that's just, I can't imagine
losing
that many receivers.
No. So you've got the receivers, and, you know, they're scattered here and there, and they're, you know, hopefully they're pretty well, you know, under wraps. It's not something that you put a, you know, orange flag on and say, hey, we got one over here. You know, you don't want that stuff. So, you know, but okay, so now the fish start moving into the river system, and your receivers are recording data. When you go out to fish for these fish, you'll know immediately if there's something in the area, or you'll know that there was something in the area in the past whatever time period it might be. I don't know how far back you look, but
what we do is we have a water quality monitoring station
right
way up in the Marshy Hoop, and we leave it out for about a month at a time.
Right.
We have two of them, so instead of us going out there and spending 2 hours sitting on the boat, you know, cleaning the probe and recalibrating and all that, we just take another one out. And,
right.
We do that about once a month, go out. And then what we'll do while we're out there is we'll hit a couple of the receivers just to see if anybody's in the neighborhood. And I sent two of our people down to Vienna last week just to check a couple of the receivers downriver. And first week of June, I think they told me there were three of them that were in the lower Nanticoke. So they're just now starting to push back into the river.
I got it. So, and each of these fish has an individual number. So you'll know that you caught this fish on X date in 2016 and it's returned to the river four times and that type of thing, or it's staying in the river, or it's doing what it's doing. But now, are they like the striped bass? Do they come in and do the, do they do their spawning run and then go back out, or why are they in the rivers in the first place?
Yeah, they these are anadromous fish, just like striped bass.
Right.
The only difference with our population in the Nanticoke, unlike a striped bass or any other, you know, anadromous fish, most anadromous fish will come in the spring. And as everybody knows, the striped bass spawn in April and early
right
May. Whereas our Atlantic sturgeon in the Nanticoke, they'll come into the bay in about the same time, March, April, May, and they push into the lower portions of the river first part of June.
Right.
And they wait until August before they push up river.
Really?
Once they push up river in August, they'll go up into the, you know, the fresh water. The salinity is literally zero where we catch them at, and they'll stay there for 3 months.
Wow.
You know, what we assume is that they're up there in, you know, spawning condition, which we know, and they're looking to spawn. So we call them fall spawners.
Okay.
There are several rivers in the Chesapeake Bay where you do see, you know, populations of fall spawners, and we're one of them. There are some rivers that have two spawning populations. They have a discrete population that moves in the springtime, and then by the time they leave, there's another discrete population that moves in the fall. That would be the James River in Virginia.
Wow.
Every time we think we know something about them, we you know, it generates more questions than it does answers.
Mm-hmm. Are there, I know this is a stupid question probably, but I'm going to ask it anyway. They were added to the endangered species list in 2012 under the previous administration. Are they endangered? I mean, was there an all-time high population during the heyday of what year, what, you know, what generation, what decade? And what has affected them to the point of being declared endangered?
Right. It was probably at the heyday of harvesting them was the late 1800s.
Okay.
And then the harvest went way down after that.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to keep fishing on a species that's so long-lived and their maturity is so slow.
Right.
You can't keep taking 9, 10, 11, 12-footers out of populations without them not being able to sustain their you know, their populations in each river.
Right. So if it was overfishing over 100 years ago, 120 years ago, so mm-hmm. let's say, if it was overfishing then, and then they stopped the fishing on them, 100 years later, they're declared endangered. Okay? I'm trying to think how that happens if they've been left alone all those years. Has their the conditions of the environment changed? I mean, are they affected by, you know, pollution, predators, habitat? What has changed in 100 years where that population didn't recover?
Right. It's a combined effect of overfishing and then also deterioration of habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other problem is that what happens is it causes a decline to the point where they just can't sustain
their
population.
They can't combat.
Mm-hmm. You know, and of course the habitat requirements, they have pretty specific habitat requirements for successful spawning. And then when you add into that the predators that are, you know, in that spawning area, one of the ones that we've recently discovered in the Nanticoke, we're starting to see a lot of blue catfish in there now.
And so, they're eating immature fish.
So yeah, that's one of the biggest problems is you know, we have the big, you know, adult fish in there and they're suspecting that they're spawning, but we need to determine whether or not it's successful or not.
Right. Okay.
And how long they can sustain, you know, how long these fish will continue where you know, we'll have successful spawning.
I got it. I mean, they can't successfully spawn if you've got creatures eating all their eggs.
Correct, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, it's just like rockfish, you know. One female rockfish lays a million eggs, and they get fertilized, but how many are supposed to survive? And the answer is two.
Right.
So they can continue the species, you know.
Yeah, that's where a hatchery stocking project does help. In the right circumstance, because we can shelter those fish through that vulnerable life stage, and then we can turn the fish loose when they're
right,
or early juveniles or late juveniles, where they're past that point,
right?
You know, of
where they can go head to head with an 80-pound blue cat and
yeah,
not have to worry about it. Yeah,
correct.
I got
yeah,
it. Huh. Interesting yeah, stuff. So. Okay, so you haven't started fishing for them yet, but how many different Atlantic sturgeon have you guys caught?
To date, we're up to 26.
26 different sturgeon in Maryland.
Well, we've caught 24 in the Marshy Hope.
Right.
And Delaware has caught two up in their portion of the Nanticoke.
Okay.
But we keep up with those guys in Delaware. You know,
kind of a joint effort, isn't it?
It is. It's a joint effort. They helped us with our water quality meter the first year, and
right.
We helped them with gill nets, giving them a couple of our receivers to put in Broad Creek, and it's a joint effort with Delaware.
Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break here, Chuck, and then we'll get back and we'll talk a little bit about equipment. How do you catch these fish? So we'll do that when we come back. Is that okay?
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about Clyde Sport Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They do not have any gear for sturgeon. Well, they probably do, but you're not allowed to catch them. But they have everything from catfish to striped bass to largemouth bass to trout to snakeheads to perch and you name it. They've got all the gear, all the bait for all the fishing that you could need, want, or imagine. And the same way with crabbing, all the traps, all the pots, the steamers, the seasoning, the bait, you name it. If it's fishing or crabbing and Clyde's doesn't have it, well, that's just not going to happen because they do have it. Don't worry about it. Clyde Sport Shop. Again, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. If you need new line, a rod and reel, if you need any bait or lures, they've got it all. They've got most of the information, licenses, and so forth. Rod and reel repairs. What else can I say? They've got everything. Trot lines. So why not stop by? Stop by and see them today. Or give them a call on their 24-hour, 7 days a week fishing hotline, 247-FISH. 247-FISH is a fishing hotline, 410-247-FISH. Or give them a call at the regular number, 410-242-6108. Or stop by and say hi. If you need it for fishing or crabbing, Clyde Sport Shop has it. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Bay Country Bakery in Cambridge, Maryland. Serves not only a great breakfast from 6 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday and all day Saturday, but you know what? They have some of the most delicious fresh baked donuts and pastries and cookies and bread on the Eastern Shore. No question about it. I don't go through the fast food or the chain store drive-thrus when I'm on Route 50 headed for the marsh or I'm going fishing. Nope, my mouth and belly can't wait to stop at Bay Country Bakery for a donut or two and a fresh cup of coffee. I just look for the big donut on the side of the bakery or the front sign, and from 11 till 2, you can grab a tasty, tasty lunch. Dave and Gina Levy are your host, and they are trained chefs, and they strive to bring you the best, and they deliver as well. Bay Country Bakery, I don't mean they deliver to your location. I mean they deliver on their service. It is the best. The food is the best. That's what I'm talking about. Bay Country Bakery is located at 2951 Coastal Highway. That's Route 50, just through Cambridge. Think big donut, big pink frosted donut with sprinkles on it. Visit their website or like their Facebook page, Bay Country Bakery, and be sure to stop by and say hello. Maybe you'll see Robin and me there. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Radio 680 WCPM. I'm on a first name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box. It's always under construction for all my weapons of mass destruction. I got buzz baits and Zara spooks, pumpkin seeds and flukes, booyah crawfish jigs. I got a 7-foot flipping stick, all the soft plastics to hook one on a Texas rig. My wife stays on me and my banker just told me that he's working on a tax deduction. For all the money I'm dropping on my weapons of mass destruction.
All right. So we're back with Chuck Stentz, who's our resident project leader on the Sturgeon Project here. And tell people what anadromous fish is, Chuck.
Anadromous fish are fish, are marine fish that move into the fresh water to spawn.
Basically spend their lives in salt water but move into fresh water to spawn.
Correct. Yeah, they move into the fresh water to spawn, and then when they're finished spawning, they, you know, they head back out to the salt water.
Right. You mean like our big trophy stripers did this year?
Yeah. Yep.
They're here, they're here, they're here. Ah, they're gone.
They're gone, yeah.
That's the way it works.
It happens quick, too.
Yeah, no question about it. So, all right, so explain a little bit about your day when you, okay, you load the boat, you go out, and, you know, now what are you doing? You check your receivers, and you find out there's a pot of fish in the river somewhere.
Right, yeah, we start at the boat ramp, and we'll do one of two things. We'll either start checking some of the receivers as we move downriver. We kind of suspect where we think they're going to be, you know, in a given week. But we'll just kind of spot check receivers as we go down. Or we have a manual tracking unit that we can use just to listen if anybody's around.
Right.
Obviously, you're not gonna fish where you know there are no fish at. So. We keep moving down until we get a couple hits on our receivers, and then we'll use the manual tracker to zone in to see exactly where they're at.
Okay.
And then we'll use gill nets to bracket them, you know, put like two gill nets above where the fish are and two gill nets below.
Right.
And then fish in that area. And once we set the nets in one area, we're usually committed to fishing there that day.
Okay.
So, like when you were out, we had a couple detections that were down around the Palmersville area.
Right.
And we decided we were going to fish there that day. And, you know, you just tend to nets, you know, they're anchored gill nets. So,
that's what I was getting to. Tell us about the equipment. Give us a little details on that. Because think gill nets and they think back to the, you know, the 20,000 pounds of striped bass that were killed and left to rot in the gill nets in the Chesapeake Bay. But that's not what we're talking about here.
Our gill nets are very well identified, very well marked. When we put them out, we'll put buoys, as everybody's seen on the bay. We have warning buoys that we place above and below our sample area. And we're basically just warning the boaters that their gill nets in the water slow down. We don't want you to, you know, whiz your prop up in our gill nets. We put our gill nets from shore to shore. We found that if we put gill nets parallel to the current, we don't catch fish. But if we put them perpendicular, that's when we're able to catch the sturgeon. And we mark them real well so the boaters know how to get around the gill nets.
Right. Right. How big is the mesh on this gill net?
Yeah, these nets are a lot bigger than what people know. Striped bass use 5-inch gill net. We're using 14-inch gill net.
Right.
And the monofilament that we're using is a lot heavier than what, you know, a regular gill net that, you know, watermen would be using.
Right. So the point isn't to capture and kill the fish. The point is to capture the fish to slow down its, you know, slow it down and be able to pull it up there on the boat. You know, more so from, not from the gills, but more so around the middle of the body or behind the fins. Am I right?
Yeah, that's what we always hope. It seems our sweet spot is the 12.5-inch gill net. We do have a 10-inch gill net that we use, and that's our oldest net. It does great at catching sturgeon. The only problem with it is, you know, the mesh is somewhat smaller, so you do have that possibility of, you know, clamping the gills closed.
Yeah, and you don't want that.
So I'm relentless. When we put our 10-inch net in the water, it gets checked once an hour.
Yes, I do know that. I know that.
We don't fool around with that 10-inch net.
Right.
We have had several times when, you know, we come up to a fish and it's not doing real well.
Right.
As soon as you get it as soon as you clear the gills, it's, you know, starts coming back around. They're really tough fish.
Right.
But our go-to net now, we use a 12.5-inch, what we call our narwhal net. We had purchased it from a supplier out on the West Coast, and luckily it was a net that somebody else wanted made, and then they never bought it. And when we heard, you know, how thick it was, how heavy it was, we said, we'll take every bit of it that they had. So
somebody had a scheme to catch narwhal?
Yeah, that's what they told us. And, so now it's affectionately called our narwhal.
Narwhal. That's pretty funny.
But it's real thick monofilament line.
Yeah.
And we found that when we were using smaller mesh net, we started out using 6, 7, and 8 inch. Now that's 6, 7, and 8 inch square stretch mesh. The monofilament was, you know, it wasn't near heavy enough. And when we would pull our nets back up, we'd see big, huge holes in them. And, you never know what it's doing down there fishing, but, you know, when it comes back up with big holes in it, you're thinking, okay, something blew right through this net.
Right.
And, you know, through process elimination, we've just gone to using heavier and heavier net. And, so now we know what to use to catch fish in our river.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
It's big net. And we anchor our gill nets too, so they don't move. Once we put them out, they set right in the same spot all day long.
Got it. Got it. Well, it's fascinating to be out there. I mean, it's a long day sometimes when you're not pulling any fish up. But, you know, when you do, I mean, it's just like all hands on deck. Let's get this fish in. Let's get this fish tagged, and let's get this fish back in the water. And, you know, the science is fascinating because you are doing something, actually doing hands-on work to hopefully lead towards the recovery of an endangered species right here in Maryland. It's pretty cool work, actually.
Yeah.
You know? So, so you average, from what you're saying, from 2014 or so, you're averaging 7 to 8 fish a year being caught and tagged, different fish.
Yeah, we started out in 2013. We went out in 2012 just to kind of get our feet wet, and of course we didn't catch anything in 2012. And 2013, we were still fishing the nets parallel to the current.
Right.
And then in 2014, we decided, okay, fishing the nets parallel to the current just isn't working.
Right.
So a couple of the places where we've seen active breaching, where the sturgeon are actually jumping.
Right.
We decided that.
That has to be pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen one. I've never seen one. I mean, I've heard them. I've turned around and looked just as they were hitting the water.
Right.
Now, all my guys have seen them.
Right.
But I have never seen one myself. I don't know why.
Well.
once we changed to setting the net perpendicular to the water current, 2014 we caught 8 fish, and then 2015 we caught 7 more, and these were all new captures.
Right.
And then in 2016, I think we caught 5 in 2016, and then last year we caught 4 new fish. But the unique thing about 2017 is we caught 9 recaptures. And what I mean by recaptures, those are fish that we've caught in the past and surgically implanted a transmitter in them. So we caught a lot more recaptures this year than new fish.
Right, right.
And that's kind of interesting that we're starting to catch a lot more recaptures now. You know, you would think that you're pretty much, you have the whole population tagged.
Right.
When you're getting that many.
That many recaptures. Yeah. And that's not a whole lot of fish, actually, but.
No, it's not a lot of fish. But then again, we're fishing a small stretch, of the river. And, you know, everybody thinks that the Little Marshy Hood Creek is a small river. But when you're out there fishing, you know, 400 feet of gill net, it's a lot bigger than what, you know.
Right.
Than what you think it is.
So. So where, you know, you can track these fish now. I mean, are there receivers, you know, elsewhere around the state or the country? I mean, can you track these fish wherever they go now, or how does that work?
Yeah, they can't hide now. The good thing is the equipment that we use is used by researchers from Canada to Florida. Everybody pretty much uses the what I mean by the same equipment, the same frequencies, the same equipment as in, they all vary.
But, right.
I can pick up anybody else's fish that enters into the Nanticoke Chop Tank or Pocomoke River.
Okay.
And then, conversely, wherever our fish go, the receivers, in another researcher's area pick up my fish as well.
Where do they go?
Well, our fish, it's kind of unique. Our fish, we have a population that is very closely, similar to the fish that are in the York River in Virginia.
York's in Virginia, okay.
What they're thinking is that our population and their population are just a small segment of a meta population that kind of trades back and forth. And they found this out through genetics.
Okay.
That our fish are very similar to the Pamunkey tributary to the York River.
Interesting.
So we have had some of our fish that we tagged in the Nanticoke that for the past 3 years. Every year they come back and they go to the Pamunkey. And vice versa. We have one of their fish that comes over and visits the Nanticoke. But through our tracking and telemetry work, we can tell when the fish leave the system, how long it takes them to get to the mouth of the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for the majority of our fish, they like the Christmas in South Carolina and, Georgia and some parts of North Carolina as well.
Really? They go that far away. How far north do they go? Do we have any data on that?
We've had one female that we received detection data from. She was in about 4 feet of water near Sandy Hook,
New Jersey.
New Jersey. We had detections last year that one of our females moved into that area, and she wasn't there long. But it's a snapshot that she was up there.
Mm-hmm.
We have had a couple of our fish go way up into the Delaware River. Again, they just went up there and kind of hung out, and then they came right back out.
But, I like the way you say our fish. The fish you guys have tagged.
They're our fish since we tagged them.
Right, of course. Yeah, I guess.
But the vast majority of our fish, when they leave the Nanticoke, they leave first part of October.
Right.
Within about a week, they're all gone. And then in another month, it takes them about a month to get from the Nanticoke down to the mouth of the bay. The U.S. Navy has a huge array down around Norfolk and the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel.
Right.
And then, they send us data as well. And then, by Christmas, they're in South Carolina. We've even had them as far south as Georgia. Most of the detections we get are ocean arrays,
mm-hmm.
People that have arrays in the ocean. We've even had one of our females that was detected in 42 miles out to sea, right from the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. There's a big array that they have out 40-some miles.
When you say array, you're talking about a detection receiver.
It's just a grouping of receivers. And,
right.
They kind of overlap just so you create like a gate.
I get it.
So that's how we can tell where they're, how far south they're going.
Are there other folks involved in tagging efforts on the Atlantic sturgeon where you're getting fish from other states that have been tagged and coming into our rivers or not?
Yeah, we also have an array right at the Bay Bridge. We have four receivers right south of the Bay Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten fish from Connecticut, some from Virginia. And the funny thing is, all the fish that we tag in the Nanticoke, we've never got a detection up around the Bay Bridge. It's almost like when they leave the Nanticoke, they leave the bay.
How many tagged sturgeon are there in around the coast? I mean, in your world, how many?
I wish I knew that. The only ones that we know of are whatever is, we're a part of it's called the ACT network.
Yeah.
And what it is, it's like a grassroots, collection of researchers that what they'll do is they'll
share data and that type of thing.
They'll give their data to the data set, and then we can go in and find out what fish is related to what researcher.
Right.
And it's an easy way for us to give them their data, and in turn they give us our data.
But there's nobody out there saying, we've got, 24 fish tagged from Maryland. There's, 15 tagged in New Jersey, 4 in Delaware, 6 in there's not somebody out there like the white shark experiment where they're, tagging these sharks and everybody knows where they all are at all times. You guys, we've tagged 71 fish so far in the system. I mean, nobody's sharing that kind of information, is what you're
saying. Not really. Everybody kind of deals with their own own fish.
Yeah,
and that's where we get the.
Wouldn't it be beneficial to intersect those numbers and find out?
Yeah, but there's a lot of politics involved with that. Like I said, I'm okay. the quote unquote owner of any tags that we put out there, or what we call transmitters.
Right. Okay.
When we get other people's transmitters, in our river, we'll ask them for permission to include that in our report or papers that we write. And for the majority of the time, everybody's been really good about, we give each other data.
Now, I got it.
Again, we're talking about fish from Virginia. That's about the extent of our contact with everybody else.
I got it. Okay.
Very seldom do we get fish from other states other than Virginia.
Right.
And again, like I said, that one fish from Connecticut that he was detected on the array by the Bay Bridge.
Hmm. Interesting. It's fascinating because it's just such an unknown by most anglers here in the Bay, and it's out there. They're not quite as elusive as manatees in the Chesapeake, but they're pretty cool animal that you've got something as big as a 7-8 foot, 10 foot fish out there swimming around, and we're studying them to try and help recover the population. What's the prognosis for the future of the Atlantic sturgeon, in your opinion, Chuck?
Well, the one thing that I've noticed over the past years, I mean, you always see these issues like the recent Patapsco River with the amount of flooding that Ellicott City had.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing, but overall, the one thing that I noticed is, over the past 15, 20 years, there's been a lot of changing in farming practices.
Okay.
You don't have the hard moldboard plowing anymore. Everything is no-till.
Right.
And you notice that a lot more, especially in the Marshy Hook Creek. We very seldom have, those times when you just have that, chocolate milk-colored mud coming down through the river.
Right, yep.
That's one of the nice things about the Marshy Hook Creek. It seems like it's a very clean system, as far as, turbidity goes, things like that. And with those kind of changes, it does, help. To restore these species.
Sure.
Because that is one of the, one of the problems, the habitat. These fish need to have clean gravel to spawn on. And that's sometimes a problem.
Well, especially with the silt and everything else that you were talking about. And the turbidity is what, is all that.
Yeah, it pretty much suffocates the eggs.
Actually. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When they do lay their eggs, the eggs become adhesive.
Ah, that I didn't know.
They stick right to gravel, cobble, not so much sand, but, then that's where they're at for the next week to 10 days.
Got it.
The silt doesn't help things, though.
No. Got it. All right. Well, look, we're going to take another break. We'll be right back with some closing comments here after the break, and you will be free, sir, to enjoy your weekend. So, hey, let's tell them about Chesapeake Outdoors. What do you think, Chris? Should we let them in on the secret about Chesapeake Outdoors?
Yes.
The secret is the Chesapeake Outdoors is Kent Island's largest selection of fishing and crabbing supplies. But it's not really a secret because we tell about it all the time. We talk about all the crabbing gear they have. I like their wooden live boxes, quite frankly. That's one of my favorite things to look at in there. I don't know who makes them or where they get them, but they're pretty cool if you want to keep, you know, catch some crabs and keep them off your dock. But they have the pots, commercial pots, if you want to use one of those. They have the, you know, or off your dock, which, you know, you need a permit for. And then also you've got the crab traps, the nets, the bait, the trot lines, the hand lines, anything and everything for crabbing. And they've got our buddy, Cecil in there with his Cambridge Spice Company, which they got a new crab spice, too. So they've got that at Chesapeake Outdoors. But bucktails, parachutes, umbrellas, planer boards, planer lines, planer flags, planer equipment if you want to troll. They got everything you need for live lining, chumming, non-offset circle hooks, and the whole deal for fishing. Anything for the Chesapeake Bay, the tidal rivers, and freshwater as well. A complete selection of live and frozen bait. Yeti coolers, Costa Del Mar sunglasses, Bubba Blade knives. And then on the hunting side, they've got a giant selection of crossbows and bows like Matthews, Remington shotguns, Chiappa, Escort, Banded, camo clothing, and the whole deal for hunting as well. They are open now. They're on Route 50 East, exit 39B, which is Dominion Road, right there on Kent Island. You turn off on the Dominion Road right between the Exxon and the 7-Eleven. You go make a right turn, and you're in the parking lot there at Chesapeake Outdoors. That phone number, 410-604-2500. 410-604-2500 for Chesapeake Outdoors.
WCBM, Baltimore.
Unsettled weather here for the weekend with scattered showers and even thunderstorms today and tomorrow. Mostly cloudy skies for us here today, warm and humid with scattered showers and storms. Some of the storms producing heavy downpours at times and gusty winds, highs mid part of the 80s. Scattered showers and thunderstorms for us here tonight, upper 60s. Cloudy and cooler for Sunday with more showers, even a rumble of thunder possible tomorrow, high 73. Still a chance for showers Monday. I'm meteorologist Ken Boone from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680. WCBM.
Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner or the Linex extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck, step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex.
Hey, if you go to 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, you'll run right into Clyde Sports Shop. We don't want you to do that because they got big metal posts right outside the door. So don't run into them. But they do have everything for fishing, crabbing, hunting, rod and reel repair, gunsmithing, licenses, crab bait, crab traps, crab pots, crab trot line, crab steamers, crab spice. You get the idea. They're all about crabbing as well. Don't forget, they do rod and reel repair. They'll put a new tip on your rod if you slam it in your car door or pick it up by the tip like I did and break the tip off of it earlier this year. And then they also can rewind a guide onto your rod. They can lubricate your reel and clean it up and get it ready nice and smooth to fish. And you got brand new line on there because you left your fishing rods in your trunk last summer and they got 900 degrees in there and they melted your line. Well, they actually weakened your monofilament line. So you got to get new line in there. And by the way, today's a free fishing day. So go get some bait, get your old fishing rod out, put some line on it, put a new hook and a bobber on there and go fishing today because it's free. Not courtesy of Clyde Sports Shop, but I'm just rambling. So go to 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9, 410-242-6108, or their fishing hotline, 247-247-FISH. That's their number, 247-FISH. Put a 410 in front of it, you'll get a great fishing report. Clyde Sports Shop. Goodbye.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built their reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680, WCPM.
All right, come on. I know you're describing Chuck's dance because he's out there with radio trackers on sturgeon. So, Chuck, are you a high-tech redneck?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's
lecture fishing, boat, tracking, yeah, we do it all.
I get it. Yep, I understand. So, hey, look, thanks for joining us this morning. You've given us great education on a very little-known species here in the Chesapeake Bay, the Atlantic sturgeon, and Maryland's efforts to recover that. We want to send a shout-out to your crew, too. They do a magnificent job.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. All the biologists here in Maryland work hard to do a very good job and scientifically monitor whatever species it might be for the sustainability of the species. So tell them I said great job, everybody. And, Chuck, we appreciate you being here.
Will do.
Thank you, sir.